Hi, folks. Welcome to the SolarFit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher here again with you this morning. I want to give you the weather report. For once, it's raining out. Today, it's a little bit rainy here in the Sunshine State, a little bit unusual. We're used to seeing sunshine almost all the time. But, you know, it's a welcome break. Makes us appreciate it a little bit more. Want to give a shout-out to Daytona Dodge Jeep Chrysler Ram, you know, for all their support and the support for the Race to Stop Suicide with Daniel Dye and Ben Kennedy Racing. Next stop will be Daytona International Speedway about a month down the road for the NASCAR ARCA race. Daniel will be driving the full season for Petty GMS Racing and supporting Race to Stop Suicide. So, folks, please join us in our mission. Love to have you. Also want to talk about our friends at Giuseppe's Pizza. They have some coupons down there for you, as well as Pictona, the world's greatest pickleball facility right here in Holly Hill, just down the street from our studio office right here. And, boy, do they have an excellent restaurant called The Kitchen. If you have a chance, stop in and view that. And also our newest Race to Stop Suicide partner, the Beachfront Grill in Flagler Beach. Man, they got some awesome food. I was up there this weekend and had one of their burgers and a little bit of a beverage, and just a fun spot. And I'll tell you, I don't think you get a better view in the whole state of Florida when it talk about looking out at the ocean. Really cool. Well, our guest today is Dr. Crystal Watson, a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins Center for Health and Security. And we're going to bring her on in just a minute. Okay, folks, I had a little bit of a technical issue on our side. We had new phones installed and been a bit of a challenge getting used to it, but I finally was able to get a hold of Dr. Crystal Watson. Dr. Watson, welcome to the Renewable Energy Show.
Thanks for having me on.
It is really nice to have you on. Now, I think you're up in, where, in the Maryland area?
Yeah, in Baltimore, Maryland, where it's a little more wintry than it is there.
Have you had any snow up there yet?
No, not yet. Just rain. I'm hoping for some snow soon, but yep, just a little dreary and cold at the moment.
Well, you know, Christmas is right here. We deserve to have a little bit of snow, but they can hold off down here in Florida. I do remember one Christmas that we had flurries, and boy, was that unusual. But anyway, it is so good. Dr. Watson, before we start here, because you've got a very interesting topic, could you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and how you ended up in this business?
Sure. Happy to. My name is Crystal Watson. I'm a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. And so I've been doing this work for about almost 18 years now, working on preparedness for pandemics and other public health emergencies. And so I'm originally from the Denver area in Colorado and moved out to work in public health, and fortunately landed at this organization, which has been really at the forefront of preparing our communities for this type of emergency. And so that's really been my passion for the last almost two decades.
Well, folks, if you're new to the show, we talk about renewable energy, we talk about sustainability, we talk about health issues, and this is a very important health issue that we're going to discuss today. Let me ask you a question, Dr. Watson. You're from out there in Denver. What inspired you to get involved in these health issues like this? Were you younger, or did you just what brought it on?
Yeah, well, I was really interested in medicine when I was in college and planned to go to medical school, and then I moved out to Maryland and was exposed to the field of public health, which is similar to medicine. It really focuses at the population level. So our motto at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins is saving lives millions at a time. And that was really appealing to me, that I wasn't just touching one person at a time and trying to help them feel better. It was trying to prevent and address big public health issues and help people on a large scale.
Well, that's incredible, the work that you're doing. I had a chance to read a report. It's very interesting. If you folks have a chance to download it, it's called Striving Toward Health Equity and COVID-19. Doctor, COVID-19 came out of nowhere, and now it's everywhere and it's nowhere. It's just so confusing, all the different reports that we're getting. Tell us a little bit about how you first learned about it and kind of what's happening since then.
Sure. So my colleagues and I first became aware of of the outbreak that was happening in Wuhan, China, right at the beginning of 2020. So I think right after the new year, we became aware of reports of a new respiratory virus that was circulating there. So it's been about two years now into this, and while it was something we didn't entirely anticipate, my colleagues and I and others working in public health preparedness have thought about this a lot, about what we would do to respond if there was a pandemic. We've had pandemics before. We had one in 2009 with the H1N1 pandemic, for example, influenza. And so we've been trying to put its systems in place in order to be better prepared to respond. Now, in the reality of a pandemic, pandemics really break systems. And so we've seen a lot of things go wrong. We've seen lots of devastation, unfortunately, in this pandemic. And so what we're trying to do now is learn from our experience with COVID-19 and try to put systems in place that really make us better prepared for what we might face in the future.
Well, for folks like myself that it's not, we're not doctors, what's the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic?
That's a great question. So an epidemic means that an outbreak of an infectious disease is localized. So it's either within a city or maybe a country, maybe even a region. But a pandemic means an outbreak of an infectious disease that's everywhere around the world. So it's pretty ubiquitous, and that's what we're facing right now with COVID.
Wow. Well, thank you for that information, because that's a question I had. You know, if we go back in time and we you know, read stories of the Black Plague and all these different things, these were kind of the same type thing, right? I mean, they weren't particularly a virus, but they created a tremendous amount of havoc. How did we ever get through those? Can you recall some of those instances, and how did we get through them?
Yeah, we as humanity have faced a number of pandemics over the centuries. Like you said, the Black Death, that was plague. We've had influenza pandemics. We've had multiple influenza pandemics throughout the 20th century, actually. One of the ones that we've learned a lot from and pointed to as one of the more severe pandemics is the 1918 influenza. That really challenged society. It caused a high degree of deaths, and it really, I think, informed some of our preparedness for this pandemic. I think there are a lot of new tools that we have now that weren't available in 1918, obviously, particularly related to medical care. And so I think we have high-quality medical care, particularly in the U.S., that can help mitigate the consequences of this pandemic that we didn't have before. But some of the other tools we have existed for a long time. So all the things that we're doing to wear a mask indoors, try and keep people out of very crowded situations, just taking precautions to keep as safe as possible. All those things, sometimes we call non-pharmaceutical interventions, are things that we're doing now, and they also did in 1918.
That's a very good point. I think back, the stories that I heard of my ancestors came from Ireland and in the 1850s with a potato famine, and they ended up having to quarantine in on the St. Lawrence Seaway. I was reading stuff about that. It's just amazing that all these things occurred, and it just seems like back then there was a lot of deaths of young people. Weren't they very susceptible to something like that?
Yeah, there have been different viruses, different diseases that have had higher consequences for younger people in some cases for older people. We know that influenza often affects very young and the very old more severely. So it really depends on the organism we're talking about. But right now with COVID-19, we do know that the risk is much higher for people who are older, and that's why it's been so important to get people who, over the age of 65 in particular, vaccinated as soon as possible, because we do know that the virus causes more severe illness and, unfortunately, deaths in that older population if they're not protected.
What is the difference between a virus and, say, like a cold, like you're not feeling good and, boy, you just have aches and pains? What's the difference between that and a virus?
Yeah, so the common cold is often caused by different viruses, actually, and sometimes even coronaviruses. These are more seasonal coronaviruses that cause milder symptoms but have been circulating in our communities for a long time. So often, when you get a cold, it's caused by one of these viruses. COVID-19 just has some different properties to it, making it more severe for some people. And right now, we're facing the Omicron variant, which appears to be much more transmissible than prior versions of the virus, basically. So it just viruses differ on what types of symptoms and consequences they cause for individuals.
Yeah, great. Great information to have. You know, just for folks that might be tuning in 5 years from now, going back and on our podcast, this is a broadcast right around Christmas time in 2021, just to bring everyone up to date. Now, the Omicron virus, right now, from what we're hearing, sounds like it's very highly transmissible, but it doesn't have quite the effects of the other one. Is that correct? Are we hearing the right information?
So, yeah, the information we have, which is we're gathering new information every day, is that it spreads really quickly and efficiently between people. So we think that's probably more transmissible, but also it evades our immunity to some extent. So people who have been previously infected with other forms of the virus or who have been vaccinated, they may be more likely to get infected again with the Omicron variant. And that helps it spread a little more efficiently. What we do know is that vaccines, in particular, and if you've been infected as well as vaccinated, that offers some pretty good protection still against severe illness and death. So it's really important to be vaccinated and boosted if you have the opportunity. We're learning more about the severity of this variant. We don't have a lot of good information yet, because we're still early on in this variant spread, to understand the severity of the illnesses that it causes. We have some preliminary indications from South Africa that maybe it is less severe in some people, but we're still waiting for more information from hospitals and to really say for sure if it's less severe. Even if it is less severe, though, because it spreads so efficiently, we're going to have large numbers of people infected with Omicron. And so just by law of numbers, if you have large numbers of people, even if it's a small percentage who have to be hospitalized, that still could be a lot of people in the hospital. So it's really important right now to take precautions as much as you can, to wear a mask indoors, try and avoid crowded situations, testing when you can. Those are all things that we can do to limit the chances that you're infected.
Is the test pretty much the same as the other COVID test? I mean, is it the nose swab, or how do you test for the Omicron?
Yeah, the tests are the same that we've been using previously. So we have PCR tests, which are run by a laboratory. So I know we're trying, the public health agencies, laboratories, and other organizations are trying to scale up testing right now because people want access to tests for a number of reasons. So you could be symptomatic, and if so, you want to go get a test. You could be looking to go to a family gathering for the holidays, and that's really important to test as close as you can to that gathering to make better sure that you're not infected and exposing people. And so those are some ways to help give you a little bit of reassurance and reduce the risk of getting and passing this virus on.
All good.
There are also at-home tests And those can be useful as well, but they may be a little less sensitive than the PCR tests.
Boy, you read my mind on that one, Doctor. I was just going to ask these over-the-counter test kits that are available in some of the pharmacies, and maybe after the break you could go into a little bit of detail about the pharmacies because we're getting close to the break. But that was my question. Is that fairly accurate? If you bought a home test, could you be fairly accurate and trusting in them?
Yeah, so it's not a guarantee that you're not infected if you get a negative at-home test, and it works better if you're testing multiple times over a few days to ensure that you're not infected and just not the test isn't picking it up, but they can be used in that way.
Gosh, boy, this is great information, Doctor. Thank you so much. Hey, folks, we're going to have to take a short break. Please stay with us. We can come back. We're going to talk about what the role that pharmacies have in helping us stay healthy. We'll be right back with you.
Hi folks, Bill Gallagher with SolarFit here. I'll bet there's something new that you didn't know. You can combine your new roof with solar power. How cool is that? So if you're getting ready to buy a new roof, check out the Solar Plus Roof Program by SolarFit. And here's a bonus. You could get a 26% federal tax credit and may lower your electric bill to $8 a month. Whoa! SolarFit, the local company that people have trusted for over 46 years.
SolarFit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher with you, and I'm speaking with Dr. Crystal Watson, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health and Security. And prior to the break, Dr. Watkins, Dr. Watson, you sure answered a lot of my questions, I'll tell you. I apologize for having all these questions, but hopefully the listening audience has the same ones. If we could, there are pills coming out now. As an alternative to shots, and I'm wondering what's your feeling about that?
Sure, that's a great question. So the way I look at the new antivirals and monoclonal antibody treatments that are coming out is that they can be really helpful at reducing and avoiding severe disease in people if they're treated early. So this is actually not an alternative to vaccination. Vaccination is really important because it helps prevent infection and prevent severe illness. But these treatments can help reduce the chances of severe illness once somebody is infected. You have to take them fairly early after infection, after symptoms start, so within 3 to 5 days. So it's really important to seek out these medications early on. If you have been infected before, it gets really bad, actually. So if you have symptoms, you know you're infected, then it's a good idea to go contact your physician and try to understand how you can get access to these treatments.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, we should be vaccinated. We should probably have some test kits available, and we need to have access to the Molly, please give me the pronunciation correct. What is the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I would just refer to them as antivirals or treatments for COVID-19, and your doctor will know what to do.
Okay, so there's your kit. You need that kit to ward off any evil or stuff like that. Talk a little bit, if you will, about pharmacies. You know, we all have our family doctors, but you know, sometimes it's really, really hard to get in to see your doctor. And what's always been a concern to me is when you go in to see the doctor, there's 12 other sick people in the same room. And I'm going, whoa, how cool is that? So tell me about pharmacies.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Actually, it's something you said I just want to respond to. Most people do have a primary care doctor, but some people don't. And so this creates some access issues for many people across the country. Vulnerable people of color, sometimes don't have access to the medical system otherwise. But pharmacies are a good access point for many people. The statistic is actually that about 90% of the U.S. population lives within 5 miles of a pharmacy. And you don't necessarily need a primary care physician to go to a pharmacy for COVID-19, for example, to get a test or a vaccine and get advice from a pharmacist. So I think they're really important components of the medical system and a way that people can just really access care without having to go through, as you said, go to the doctor's office, sit in the waiting room, make an appointment that are hard, it's hard to get. Pharmacies have been really good for that, and especially during COVID. I think it reduces some of the access issues and inequities that we've been seeing that have caused increased illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths for vulnerable populations, including people of color and indigenous people.
Yeah, you know, if you go back to when this first became known as a source and everyone was lining up to go get their booster shots and they couldn't all get them the same day, it was like, this is like really, really crazy. And now you look at the pharmacies and a lot of them are doing the shots right there, and you just drive in and roll up your sleeve and drive out. I mean, it's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's been some really unique and kind of imaginative partnerships between pharmacies and public health agencies and community organizations and leaders to create new ways for people to be vaccinated. So including drive-through clinics out in the communities, just increased access at pharmacies, longer hours and more staff, getting vaccinations and doing testing. I think these have all been good initiatives that have helped people get more access. There's a lot more work to do, I think, but this is what we wanted to do with this report was to really look at what's been done through pharmacies during the pandemic and then see what we need to make more permanent for the future.
Well, I really enjoy going to the pharmacy. I always end up spending more than I think I'm going to when I go in there, because I tell the pharmacist, and these pharmacists, both the ladies and the men, are really, really smart, because they get asked 1,000 questions a day, right? And I say, I got a sore throat, and they come out from around the back and they walk me over, and this is what you want. I think that's pretty darn cool. That you don't get that in the big box store sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think over time we have seen pharmacists be able to do different things. So a couple of decades ago, pharmacists really couldn't provide vaccinations. They weren't licensed to do that. But now we have expanded their scope, the care that they are able to provide. So it includes things like vaccination and providing advice, providing mental health services, testing for more than just COVID, for many types of diseases now. All of this, I think, is really valuable and helps a lot of people. And so hopefully we can continue to build on that for the future, not just in COVID, but for normal times as well and for our next emergency.
And I think it's really cool that these folks in the pharmacy, they're cross-trained in a lot of different disciplines. Now a lot of physicians are specialists in one thing or another. But the pharmacy, I mean, the pharmacist, boy, they get asked so many different questions. I think it's amazing. They must be very well educated.
Definitely, yeah. I know they go through a lot of different training during their years in pharmacy school. So, yeah, and I think their training continues to expand as they get more ability to practice in these different ways.
Okay, I got another question for you. Uh-oh, here we go. The mask, the no mask, the
yeah.
One mask, the three masks, the two masks, the outside mask. I mean, it's like, you know, I actually see people riding bicycles by themselves with masks on. I'm going, that just seems a little bit off to me. Here's my question. Are there any delirious, help me with that word, negative effects of
deleterious.
That too. Thank you, doctor. My speech therapist is now with us, folks. But anyway, it's all cool. Again, this is me because I'm not a doctor, right? But it seems to me that by constantly always wearing a mask, there could be some negative effects, because when you breathe in and you exhale, that exhaust, if you will, isn't that supposed to be to purify your body. Is there any problems with breathing that in?
Yeah, actually, so we have a lot of research on this, particularly because doctors wear masks all the time, and the really high-quality masks, so the respirators that we've heard about in the news, N95 respirators, which are really fitted to your face and try to prevent viruses from entering. So we have lots of good research that shows that there are really no effects like you talk about over the long term from wearing the mask. What we do know is that it has had a pretty good effect at protecting people, particularly when you're in indoor situations where there may be people who are unvaccinated who are infected and you don't know. So it is something tangible that we can do to reduce our risk from getting infected. So there are different types of masks. Some are more protective than others. I think particularly with the Omicron variant, it's important to have a really high-quality mask because it's so transmissible. And so wearing a KN95 mask, which you can get pretty readily over the Internet now, or wearing a surgical mask, or like you said, we can double up masks. That just helps with the fit. So wearing a surgical mask under a cloth mask, it can be effective. And then if you have a high-quality cloth mask on its own, it's still pretty protective, both against getting infected and passing it on to someone else if you are sick and don't know it. So a high-quality mask would have multiple layers, be well-fitted to your face, not have big gaps, things like that.
Okay, that helps a lot. You know what I find interesting was, 5 years ago, if you went into a bank with a mask on, they go, my God, they're robbing the place. You know, now if you go in there and you don't have a mask on, my God, they're going to kill us. It's crazy. You know, do you ever think about things like that? I mean, it just strikes me as different.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a cultural shift for sure. If you look at Southeast Asia, who experienced the original SARS epidemic back in the early 2000s, they really had that experience much earlier than we did, and we've seen that has resulted in a lot more mask wearing in those societies, particularly in the winter months when you have cold and flu season. And so there was a cultural shift then for them, and I think we're experiencing that now in the U.S. And me personally, I think I'll probably continue to wear masks in cold and flu season in the future when I'm going into a risky situation. So if I'm in a hospital or if I'm in a really crowded place and there's a lot of flu going around, for example, I think that's something that's going to stick with me and probably a lot of other people as well.
I think that makes perfect sense, Doctor, really. Now, tell me the truth now. There's no one listening but me and about 15 million people, okay? It's just us. If you go out for a bike ride by yourself, do you have your mask on?
Only if it's keeping my face warm.
Okay.
That could be the case. It's pretty safe to be outside in the open air, especially if you're not within about 3 feet of somebody else. It's pretty safe. So I take my son to the park, and we don't wear a mask when we're outside. Some people may want to do that if it gives them a better feeling of safety, but I think it's outside activities are much safer than crowded indoor ones, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Doctor. That really, really, that energizes me. I love to see that because I love to see the personal freedom of people being able to safely go out there, take a mask off, especially if not around people. That is so great, especially with kids. Gosh, we're almost out of time. Dr. Watson, I want to thank you so much. This has been a fun interview for me, and I've learned so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love explaining this stuff, and so happy to come back again in the future if you have more questions.
Well, I'm sure we will. How can people learn more about you real quick?
Yeah, so you can look at my organization. It's the Center for Health Security at healthsecurity.org, or you can read our report at nacds.org.
Okay, beautiful. Doctor, thank you so much. Folks, we're going to have to sign off for now. We're at the end of time. Have a great weekend. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you next week.
SolarFit Renewable Energy Radio Show, paid for by SolarFit.